Morale was an all-time low. Frost was upbeat, but he was still having lots of difficulties operating the trapezohedron, to the point where, after many fruitless tries, he handed it to Firth, trying to get her to open the portal that would get us to Celephase. She did it in a matter of seconds, and the portal deposited us just outside the gleaming white city of Celephase. She led us away from the city along the cliffs dominating the coast towards an inn, where, after words whispered into the ears of the innkeeper, we were led to a private room on the upper floors. The people of the inn seemed happy, content, vibrant, and very much alive, this being quite a sudden change from the last 32 days in the Dreamlands and the last couple of months in the Big Easy. It's been a long while since I'd seen so many smiling faces. It was a bit of a culture shock, really. I started to see the benefits of Pentagon policy of not dropping troops straight from the combat zone back into civilian life. It's all very, very strange. Firth left to talk to some contacts in the city. Before long, however, we were engaged in conversation by a cat. Yes, a cat. From the city of Ulthar, which is frankly overrun with them. His name was Sergeant Baker, and he was an envoy of General Tom. I remember General Tom quite fondly, actually. He'd cleaned Martikian's clock when Martikian became a bit too lippy with the old boy last time we were in the Dreamlands. Baker had a message for us, and that message was to get the hag out of Dodge as soon as possible, and he'd been sent to help us get home. A tiny part of me wanted to resist this. After all, what had we accomplished in our 32 days in this place? Well, we got Cecile back. Firth confirmed that Devereaux's body and spirit were reunited again. But she's in what you'd call a dissociative state. In English, that means she's so traumatized, her mind has cut off all contact with reality. Hardly a surprise, given the situation. What else have we achieved? Stopped Steno in the Dreamlands? No. Helped the Bloodsuckers put a stop to the Iron Army's expansion? Well, maybe. Given Rochelle Devereaux is now in the hands of the Moonbeasts, I kind of have to put that down as a fail. Got any information on Steno's vulnerabilities? Maybe. That's if the original unabridged copy of The King in Yellow that's now in our hands yields something. We agreed to follow the sergeant's advice and snuck out of the inn and followed Baker on the road into town. We had a bit of an unpleasant encounter with the management of 13, one of whom we'd met before, another one that we hadn't. They summarily informed us that they were pulling out of Dodge and taking Firth with them. Unpleasantries were exchanged, mostly by the others, not by me, a fact so rare it's worth mentioning. Then, once they'd gone, Baker led us on into the city. Celephase looked pretty much the same as it did when I was last here. A bit more than a real-world year ago, but I'm not sure how much time that is in Dreamland's time. As we entered the city, I noticed that some things had changed. The wizard's quarter and the barracks had both been expanded. I had half a mind to see if Kemwasset, we had met last time, was still around. After all, he taught me the shield of Isis, without which I, and by extension we, would have died a couple of times over already. But I was keen to get going. Baker led us to the great library of Celephase. It does what it says on the tin. It's a great storehouse of books, scrolls, and other written materials. Baker led us up to the librarian, who made some inquiries as to our purpose. We said we'd like to look under W for We Gotta Get Out of Here, and our origins under E for Early 21st Century Earth. Aisle 5, Row 21 was our destination. Then, of course, he had to ask whether we wanted to exercise our right to check out one book. This proved an interesting question. Maybe we'd be able to get some information on Steno after all. So we inquired if the library held the standard work on Steno, you know, who's who of insane dictators with interstellar magical powers, or Nunu Ka, as he was colloquially and locally known. The librarian came up with two items. One, a tome on Polynesian deities, and one on the followers of Nyarlathotep. I decided that the latter title was of greater interest, but was informed that it was in aisle 9, row 10, the dangerous part of the library. There was some discussion, but I pushed through my decision to go there. On the little library plan, which they handily had a reception, it was color-coded purple, borderline black. That was ominous. It's a zone where anyone and anything could be. But I thought I'd push the envelope, and we went ahead. The walk towards aisle 9 was eerie. As you move away from the librarian station, you're actually traveling through space and time. The Library of the Dreamlands manifests in several locations across the world at once, and it's not an exaggeration to say that finding your book can be a one-way trip to being another visitor's lunch. As we advanced deeper, things became more and more ominous. Shadows began to deepen, and darkness set in. Frost created a lamp using his dreaming skills, which helped. It helped us get through the aisle where spiders, big spiders, but not as big as the spiders in the Sun and the City were. They were scurrying across books and spines. When we reached the fabled row 10, there was just one book there, The King in Yellow. There was some debate as to whether we should take it. Frost had become the most knowledgeable in the occult among us. He was with Chance and Martikian as they worked their way through the labyrinth between worlds from Jumaine Street to Carcosa. I only knew what Chance and Frost had told me about that, how the play depicts the arrival of the King in Yellow. As Steno seems to have his hard, dark heart set on that, and perhaps, just perhaps, if we could study that unabridged text, we might find indications in how he could be stopped. But just as we were picking up the book, once again, we found ourselves under attack. It was the return of the Iron Samurai again, and he had four pajama brigade freaks with him. I tried to pull an Indy on one of them and fire the Luger, but the bullet seemed to be cushioned by some kind of shadowy air surrounding the attackers. Frost worked frantically to activate the trapezohedron to get us out of the library and back to the entry point to Setterface, while the guys in the Black 90s were coming at us. It says a lot about our combat readiness. The substantial damage was inflicted by Baker the Cat. He clawed one in the face, then climbed up the book stands, drawing the same fellow after him, and then dropping on him from above, causing said pajama freak to lose his grip and crash down. Chief was cut down off his feet, one of the freaks running his sword right through him. Frost worked his magic, opening the portal, but then only to have it slammed shut again. I don't know if that was the environment of the library which might have resisted the gate opening, or whether that son of a bitch in the iron mask had something to do with it. I dug a deep cut to one leg, and another, a lesser one, to my other leg, by the time Frost managed to overcome the barriers and open the portal properly. I sheathed my blade and moved to grab Chief and the still unconscious Devereaux. Without supernatural strength provided by the Loas, I would not have succeeded. But somehow I managed to get Chief over my shoulder, Devereaux under one arm, and I rushed for the gate. But I was stopped dead in my tracks by the bastard in the iron helm, who lashed out with his foot and caught me square in the chest. I went down like a sack of shit and dropped both Chief and Devereaux. The iron goon towered over me with his sword raised. I tried sweeping him off his feet, but I was too slow, and he simply jumped over my legs. I remember thinking what a lousy way this was to die, just so close to getting home. I gritted my teeth and made ready to push myself up and just body slammed the bastard, like I was Marty McSorley.
No fighting in the library.
Librarians can be a scary bunch, and in this case, it was the head librarian in full robe-flowing pomp. I'd never been so pleased to see a librarian before or since. He swept our assailants into the shadows, and then transported all of us to Aisle 2, where he picked up a book and made Frost start to cast a spell from it, a healing liturgy. I lost consciousness at that point, and when I came to, I guess several hours must have passed. We were all hale and healthy. I deduced that the spell had drained us of magical reserves in order to power it. We needed to recover our breath for a while before we headed for Aisle 5, and hopefully, the way home.